This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Ian McEwan, the British novelist who wrote Saturday, Amsterdam, and Atonement, has just published a short novel called On Chesil Beach. It's about the disastrous wedding night of Edward and Florence. Edward has studied history and likes American rock and roll. Florence is a violinist in a string quartet. He is eager to consummate their relationship. She is terrified. Here's the start of the novel, read for us today by Ian McEwan.
They were young, educated, and both virgins on this their wedding night, and they lived in a time when a conversation about sexual difficulties was plainly impossible. But it is never easy. They had just sat down to supper in a tiny sitting room on the first floor of a Georgian inn. In the next room, visible through the open door, was a four-poster bed, rather narrow, whose bed cover was pure white and stretched startlingly smooth, as though by no human hand.
You have written a story here from out of the pre-sexual revolution days. It seems to define the time that you're writing about, 1962?
This is right, 62.
Why? What's the allure of that time to you?
Well, it stands on the kind of cusp of that huge shift in sexual relations, but also social relations. Recognizably not modern. I mean, this is just on the edge of the Cuba Missile Crisis, remember? Mm-hmm. And the Berlin Wall had gone up the year before. Britain itself awash, as I think the United States was, in sort of new supermarkets, new roads, new cars, the very strong beginnings of a youth culture, pop culture. I mean, to be young was not quite yet a biologically blessed state. And to be married young was quite common. And yes, a lot of young people at that time would go into marriages knowing very, very little about sex. So these two arrive on the south coast of Dorset, on this famous beach, Chesil Beach, knowing very, very little about what's going to happen. So they really had to sort of invent it for themselves.
This is a reminder that one of the great misnomers of our times is the 60s, which describes mostly things that happened in the 70s for most people.
I know. I mean, my 60s started about 1970. I don't know about yours.
Sounds about right.
But there was a shift. There's no question that there were certain things that Edward and Florence would have felt free to do if the story was set in 1969 or 70, which they don't feel free to do here.
When you present younger audiences today with the story of the fumbling newlyweds in the Dorset Hotel in 1962, are you wondering whether it's registering, whether it feels like it's a story from Venus for them, or whether they can relate to this?
From Venus rather than Mars.
Whichever I don't know.
I did worry, or at least speculate, but I have read it now to quite a lot of young kids, and they speak rather tenderly of the characters and in rather compassionate terms, too. And it suggests to me that there is something universal about crossing this line. The terms in which we do it might be strongly influenced, mediated by the times we live in, but still it remains one of the universals of all human life, crossing that moment from innocence to experience or childhood to adulthood. And I've been rather touched by their accounts and rather relieved too.
On Chesil Beach is a story in which one moment alters the lives of people. I have read you saying elsewhere that that's an idea that you find intriguing, this notion of the accidental or contingent moment in which...
Yes. I'm not a religious person. I don't believe in fate or supernatural entities moving our lives along. And I think the accidental, the random, plays a very large part in our lives. In this story, the young couple end up out on the beach in a confrontation, which for me always was the set piece I wanted to get to. And there, it concentrated into one particular moment, is the whole manner in which these two fates will separate.
And as a novelist, you're not there to judge his behavior.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I try to distribute sympathy equally between these two. No, I don't want to blame them. It seems to me there are all kinds of bad things that happen in life without villains. Mm-hmm. And it's often driven by misunderstanding or the inability to know your own mind even before you could speak your mind to someone else. So it's that, really. Confusion, ignorance, inexperience.
And you, when you construct a novel, obviously, in one very brief moment, whether that's a moment of making love or whether it's a moment of looking out a window or whatever it might be, chapters can unfold during that time. I mean, you're using the single moment to as a prism into all of these things that have happened.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a short novel with quite a strong sort of unity of time and place. It happens almost in real time, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the first things I wrote about this novel before I started it was a simple piece of arithmetic. 5 times 8. 5 chapters, 8,000 words.
But you had the structure in mind.
Yes.
I mean, as you were just starting to write it, or did it fall into shape as you were writing the
book? I need to know the shape. It would be rather like writing a sonnet without knowing that was the form you were going to write a poem in. With a short novel like this, architecture, I think, is everything, because it's so apparent to the reader. One of the pleasures, I think, for me anyway, of reading a short novel is to be able to really feel, fondle the form, the shape of it. You don't get that with longer novels. They're great baggy monsters.
Right.
So very important for me to know I was writing 5 acts and to begin to build up a sense of how these 5 acts related to each other.
In your writing, are there false starts? That is, are there a dozen other novels that were begun over the past 20 years that just ended and are somewhere in a drawer someplace?
When they falter, I tend to end them very quickly. I mean, I do have maybe 6, 7, and even as many as 15, I had once, possible novels in my mind that I might write. And sometimes I've started writing one and ended up writing the other. But I don't... I know quite a lot of novelist friends who have in their drawers, you know, 40,000 words of abandoned novels. I seem to be able to cut out fairly quickly, you know, within a few pages. And I do keep those pages, and I do think that perhaps I will return to these abandoned sites. But I haven't done the sort of colossal journey down a cul-de-sac that I know other writers have.
I'd like you to talk about something that I read about in one of the British interviews with you, which was you were setting the record straight on something. I gather someone asked you what, as a writer, you considered a good day's work, or how much you had to write in a given day. And do I have it correct that you answered 500 words?
Yes, I said 500 words. But that's about right for me, 500, 600, 700 words. Someone wrote this down as 15 words. And it's been on the internet ever since. There's nothing I can do about this. So I have this reputation, especially in places like Germany, as being a sort of real lapidary worker. And I keep saying to the Germans, look, even if I was a stone cutter, I could do more than 15 words in a day. But people are rather impressed by this in Germany.
They think you're writing novels one haiku at a time, one haiku a day.
And I said, well, it would take me about 25 years. But you know how it is with the sort of press file nature of the internet these days. It's a bit like the Roach Motel. I mean, you can put things in, you can't get them out.
So you're out there in the internet as a 15-word-a-day McEwen, no matter what you do.
That's it.
Ian McEwen, author most recently of On Chesil Beach, thank you very much for talking with us today.
A great pleasure talking with you.
And you can read an excerpt from Ian McEwen's novel and hear him talk about the role of music in his stories at npr.org.